Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Dear listening friend, I wish to bring to you a series of three lessons on the home church and our young. We have heard the many warnings from faithful brethren who are in positions to know that the church is losing thousands of her young people every year. We have no reason to doubt the accuracy of their statements. We rather believe, however, that the home is losing the young and the church is suffering the loss. But be that as it may, we're inclined to believe that the loss of our young is possibly the greatest loss the church has suffered in the 20th century. Estimates range from 50% to 90% no longer are staying with the church, depending upon the area that is studied. Many of those who nominally remain with the church have drifted into the worldly and liberal digression and erroneous tangents so characteristic of many so-called churches of Christ today. This loss has become so apparent that during the very years when the young would ordinarily be of college age, whether they would be in college or not, they are being lost to the church. It's apparent during that span of their life. Some years ago, I set out to try to discover what was happening to the faith of young people during college years and why the loss. More precisely, I wanted to learn what the home church could do to prevent it and to recover as many as possible. I visited many campuses, both state schools and so-called Christian campuses, as well as other private institutions, interviewing students and preachers and teachers and counselors, student center directors, dorm supervisors, youth workers, deans, presidents, and whoever would give me the time to discuss this matter. The answer I received from my questions were, for the most part, thoughtfully given, because I asked them to allow me their time before I visited them, requesting that they give thought to the area of investigation I was making, and I made that request prior to our discussion. It was usually obvious that some preparation had been given to the answer to my questions. The information I received was tremendous, and the volume of it so large that all I can present in this three lessons is to just touch the surface, but I trust sufficiently, and I believe, for most of us to see the nature and the magnitude of the problem of losing our young. A lengthy series once appeared in the Gospel Advocate, reviewing my investigation and the campus visits. My inquiries were along four major lines of thought. Number one, what are the deficiencies in attitude and knowledge among incoming freshmen, and how do these change during the college years? Number two, what can the home church do once they are away from home to help them remain faithful? And number three, what are the dangers and the problems and the frustrations and the most destructive influences they encounter in college environments? And fourthly, what are the most effective means and activities for young people? What is really worthwhile that will stabilize them in the faith? And the answer varied somewhat from college to college, depending largely on the nature of the school. But there were so many things in common with all of them. I think several observations are in order. I was impressed with the value of what is called Christian schools pertaining to moral environment. I was disturbed with the glaring decline even in these schools, and particularly with the compromising false and liberal doctrines being taught and protected in these Christian campuses in recent years. Friend, it is not unfair to say that for the most part, those who sacrifice so much to bring these schools into existence have been betrayed, because the very purposes for which the school was established are being buried beneath a barrage of liberal propaganda. By noting the relatively better climate on so-called Christian campuses, we do not demean the work done among some state college students, but the state campus is far more open, compromising, permissive, and outright rebellious toward the will of God. But even the work done among students in state schools was obviously being influenced by liberal and worldly ways, all the way from near cultism to a do-your-own-thing philosophy. The acceptance of drugs, immorality, alcoholic beverages, co-ed dorms, immodest dress, profane speech, were much in evidence on state campuses far more than elsewhere. Such an environment presents special needs for the Christian who attends school in our state schools. I was impressed with the urgency of effective work among young people. While not totally in despair, I really find little reason for realistic optimism, and faithful workers among the young are in near panic as the problems sweep the youth in ever large numbers. Many of these workers have simply resigned, and even promoted the idea, let's just go along with the trends. Our losses are high, and the departures are numerous because of digressive influences from within and from without. Folks back home are too often not even aware of the seriousness and the magnitude of the problem, resting comfortably in their naive state that things now are as they were when they went to school. I'm convinced that the young people generally do not lose their faith at college, as much as having taken little faith to college with them. We're losing them before they ever reach college. It is only becoming obvious and glaringly evident once they are away from home and from the family influence, from the home church, from parental advice. But they fall under the spell of their new freedoms, and many are overwhelmed by the parade of these self-proclaimed superiors they must endure as their professors. It was startling to me to hear one tell me that probably less than 15% attend services regularly once they arrive on his campus. Campus workers often never have a chance to be of assistance because the youths never allow themselves to even know of their once-possessed connection with the church. They are obviously not doing a good job prior to their leaving for college. Liberal churches that are around these campuses, they take advantage of this attitude, and they are often successful in leading the young into a religion which is not New Testament Christianity. I am further convinced that homes and home churches are not meeting the issues, not even being aware of them sometimes, and fewer still have knowledge how to cope with them. We must get busy doing something about that. Unless great strides are taken among the young to return them to the old paths the Bible teaches, having biblical authority for what we say and do, these young people will be forever lost to the cause of Christ. Oh, they may be religious, but not as the Bible teaches people to be. Psalm 71 and verse 18, O God, forsake me not until I have declared thy strength unto the next generation, thy might to everyone that is to come. The first area of questioning had to do with the deficiencies of knowledge and attitude among those entering college. Now, these things are specifically concerned with those going to college, but they're also reasonable applicable to every age or person of that age, whether they go to college or whether they do not. They have a lack of personal conviction. They have a borrowed faith, not the real, sincere acceptance of truth because they've learned it for themselves, but because they've simply leaned upon others. Now, this is partly their own fault, I know that. But why have they not been taught better? They have attended Bible classes and worship services, but often due to family pressure and insistence, but have never really learned truth and been convinced by the evidence of truth. This is either because it has not been properly presented to them, or they've been unwilling to apply it to themselves, which in many instances is the case. Generally speaking, friend, they are biblically ignorant, and once away from home, lacking conviction, they forsake the church. Young people need to be asked, what do you believe, and why do you believe it? As one has said, God has no grandchildren. The sad fact is, parents and local brethren cannot bestow their faith on their young without the young coming to a willing faith about it and knowing why. One cannot be sustained on the faith of another. We may have told the young what to believe, but possibly we have not done a very good job to know why they should believe it. They remain uninformed until other influences take them away. And while they are often touted as the most brilliant generation to have ever come on the scene of human history, they have strong reasons to doubt that they observe what they do in their conduct to be acceptable to God. They are surely more ignorant of the Bible than most any generation in 100 or more years. Interestingly, the faith among young people who come from small, rural churches seemed far stronger than those who come from large, rich, worldly, metropolitan churches. Those from mission areas have far greater faith than those where the church counts progress in numbers. And this is probably because they have come from churches where conviction was taught to be necessary, not merely social acceptance. Faith among the young, where there are many churches, large churches, big money, that faith seems to be less grounded. Because they are what they are, because many others are what they are, and not because it's founded upon thus saith the Lord. Now this is no argument for small churches against larger churches per se, but it is a strong indictment that churches that recognize the need for thus saith the Lord produce far stronger faith than the social-minded, recreational, entertaining, numerically prominent, financially comfortable churches who have most likely compromised truth in order to gain their recognition. And we found some alarming attitudes among young people. They want less what they call doctrine. They want more what they call social action. And this they are getting from the liberal churches. They've almost entirely missed the mission of Christ and the church. Oh, they speak much of love, but they show little comprehension of what love is, that is, as it is taught in Scripture. They consider it mostly an emotion and a sentiment to be outwardly expressed, maybe by holding hands and closing eyes and swaying bodies and such as that. They do not seem to recognize that love is seeking the other's highest good as God has determined that good. They act, and of course there are some exceptions, but they act as if doctrine and love are in conflict. They fail to note the biblical teaching that one cannot separate love from obedience to the doctrine of Christ. They seem to think that love allows, let me go my own way without rebuke, whatever I say, do, or want. This they receive in heavy doses from liberal churches and liberal teachers in pulpits and college classrooms. They have considered doctrine as our doctrine, while others have their doctrine, not realizing that the Lord's church is to produce no doctrine, but it is to uphold the doctrine of Christ in our world. Many young people are being taught aggressively that our services are cold and irrelevant, and they are indifferent to services unless they have some kind of charge to make them feel good. They obviously do not understand the purpose and nature of worship. They're not aware of what the Bible teaches about worship or the proper attitude toward worship. And seldom can they tell you with biblical authority what ought to be done in worship. They have drifted, and with great help, with the trend of emotionalism, of getting turned on with Jesus and feeling good and expecting something special to come upon them from the Holy Spirit, even if it has to be invented. And characteristic of the young, they feel they simply must be accepted regardless of what they say and do and how they act or dress or what influence they exert on others. And if you do not accept them, whatever they display, why, you're bigoted, you're old-fashioned, uncaring, lacking in compassion, and cannot be trusted. They are not beyond parroting the church bashing they hear in some schools and liberal churches. Oh, they are big on condemning those who condemn anything, denying anybody the right to judge anything except for themselves. They detest any form of condemnation except what they choose to condemn. Now, those who are knowledgeable of the Bible know that these views are in error and can be and have been proven fallacious. Not all have bowed the knee to Baal, but we're speaking generally. Most are inconsistent, even if they're not aware of it. But the sad thing is that many of those have been, what is sometimes said, raised in the church, as is evidenced by their words and phrases, have little respect for the Bible. It's almost non-existent. There are other attitudes of note that are more commendable. They care far less about rugs and drapes and buildings and parking lots. I don't think that's bad. They seem to be more concerned for people than for the steeple, even though their concern is often misdirected. Many express grave disgust at large expenditures for buildings in which to meet, but have more sympathy for large expenditures in which to play. I never caught one to explain that to me. Why they do not like large buildings of worship, but they like large gymnasiums in which to play. It should be evident that these large expenditures, whichever the direction, have not stopped the youth drain. The young are really repulsed by what they consider gross hypocrisy among members of the church. Now, this probably has had a far greater impact among the young than among the older members. This may be because the hypocrisy they observe is among the older members, even though they fail to see the inconsistency and hypocrisy in their own peer group. Coming from youthful idealism into the world of realism often shakes them. They find it hard to adjust to the reality that everybody and everything is not as professed to be. Much that they call hypocrisy, however, is actually immaturity and the need for growth, even among those they criticize. They find it hard to discern the difference. And some of this will be tempered, of course, with their own maturing. There is no excuse for hypocrisy among the young or the old. But who can deny that adults have placed many stumbling blocks in the paths of our youth? I heard it repeated, folks, many times, "I'm so sick of the hypocrisy in the church." I could only assure them that many others agree with them on that score. I could not get good answers, however, from the young as to why that ought to cause them to take out their anger at hypocrites against the Lord by turning away from the church. They call the work of the church relatively unimportant. They push it aside to accommodate their whims, their pleasures, their sports, their dates, their good times. Their religion, if it remains at all, is often simply a matter of convenience rather than personal conviction. And all of this takes a deadly toll among them. We cannot overstate the power of example, good and bad. Friend, what must be done is for everybody to be taught that two wrongs do not produce a right. Nobody can go to heaven on the basis of the hypocrisy of others. Who can believe that we can throw out God and His Word simply because others ignore it or even profess to follow it but do not? Well, we want to continue the discussion about the home church and her young in following lessons. This has been the first of three. This has been A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.